Hi guys, my name is Ieva and I'm the host of the Baltic Startup Mafia podcast that is supposed to be your monthly update on the most important startup stories from all three Baltic countries, Lithuania, Latvia and Estonia. And this episode marks 1 year of the existence of this podcast. I want to thank you all for kind words that keeps me going. And I'm really proud that podcast has reached more than 100 downloads for each new episode starting from this summer. The other thing that I'm really proud of is that the fifth company in Estonia has reached the unicorn status. Congratulations, Pipedrive team. Pipedrive is the sales customer relationship management tool for small and medium-sized businesses. It has taken a majority investment from US enterprise software-focused private equity firm Vista Equity Partners that now has a majority stake into the company Pipedrive. According to TechCrunch, the transaction values Pipedrive at $1.5 billion. One more time, congratulations. Before starting the news section, I would like you to introduce to my guest for this episode. It is Audrius Zujus, guy from Lithuania who is the CTO and founder of the company Argyle. Argyle has just raised $20 million in Series A funding. Argyle's mission is to rebuild how we all can access our employment records. It should be simple to manage, transfer, and control who has access to them. But it's not. So the Argyle is about to change it. The company is mainly operating in the United States now. What is one of the most interesting facts about it is that Argyle is fully remote starting from the day one. And Audrius also will tell a story on how to run fully remote business. As he says, it is not about having as many video calls during a day as possible. But let's start with the recent news stories from Baltic countries. The biggest investment round recently, right after the Pipedrive deal, was by Estonian company Skeleton Technologies. It raised 41.3 million euro in Series D financing round, bringing its total capital raised to over 93 million euro. Skeleton Technologies is a global cleantech 100 company and the largest European manufacturer of ultra-capacitor-based energy storage. And I would like to quote here CEO and co-founder of Skeleton Technologies, Tavi Madiberg. The roadmap to zero emissions needs innovation and a mix of enabling technologies. Ultra-capacitors are a key enabler for lowering emissions. We are not competing with lithium-ion batteries and hydrogen fuel cells. We are complementary in improving performance and lowering cost. Ultra-capacitors have four times the power density of Teslas. The clear competitive advantage is not only proven by our blue-chip customer base ranging from German automotive to leading truck OEMs, grid integrators to the European Space Agency, but also by an independent study backed by the US Office of Naval Research. We have a clear roadmap to further increase our competitive advantage and increase both the energy and the power density of our products. Quote ends. One more interesting story this month is coming from Estonia. Started as a side project by its founders, the company Warren is now helping regional cloud infrastructure service providers compete against Amazon, Microsoft, IBM, Google, and other tech giants. Based in Tallinn, Estonia, Warren's self-service distributed cloud platform is gaining traction in Europe and Southeast Asia, one of the world's fastest growing cloud service markets. The company recently closed a $1.4 million seed round led by Passion Capital with plans to expand in South America, where it recently launched in Brazil. Let's continue with the unicorn stories. Lithuanian unicorn company Vinted, creator of an online marketplace for secondhand fashion, has acquired United Wardrobe, the largest secondhand fashion platform in the Netherlands. Combined member base of 34 million buyers and sellers across 11 countries in Europe, the two companies say they share a goal of encouraging responsible fashion and growing the circular economy. Financial details of the deal were not disclosed. And one more story worth to mention from Lithuania. Lithuania-based lender SME Finance has received 80 million in backing from the European Investment Bank to support small and medium-sized businesses across the Baltic region. SME Finance, which provides a fintech platform for non-banking financing in the Baltic states, says it will use the investment to meet the working capital financing needs of enterprises through its self-service factoring platform. Good news also for companies seeking support with the development of projects based in 5G technologies. Latvia has just hosted 5G Territory, one of the biggest events in the region to discuss the future of 5G in Europe and beyond. During the third annual gathering, there were EU funding programs announced that are tied to 5G-related industries, together worth over 150 billion euros. One more interesting news story to mention from Latvia. There has been a list compiled with the top 100 fastest-growing companies in Latvia, according to turnover increase from 2017. The list includes three startups: Printful, GameChanger Audio, and Altero. Printful Latvia placed 8th on the list with a 770% turnover growth from 2017 to 2019, reaching 23.13 million euros. GameChanger Audio placed 35th in the top 100. The company experienced 410% growth in turnover, reaching 1.31 million euros in 2019. Altero placed 49th. Their turnover increased by 410% from 2017 to 2019, reaching 2.09 million euros. And now let's jump into an interview with Audrius Zujus, CTO and founder of the company Argyle. Argyle has just raised $20 million in Series A funding. And one more remarkable fact to be mentioned, this global company works remotely from day one. Thank you, Audrius, for joining. And I always ask my guests to start with the pitch. So can you please pitch Argyle?
Yeah, so Argyle is a startup that allows companies, which are clients, to use our software, our SDK, to request their users the information about their work accounts, their companies they work at. So essentially, it's a model similar to a few other models like Plaid or things that do this for banks, where we come in and we say, we'll give you an SDK and you can ask your users to share their work information with you. Why would that be necessary? That's usually necessary for fintech startups, banks, insurance companies who are interested in providing financial products, loans to their customers at a better rate, or just reevaluating their ability to, you know, repay the loan or be insured or provide a better premium. And instead of going into some third-party data collector, we allow them to ask their users directly to provide that information, and we provide that data pipe that unifies these two places.
Okay, and how does it work practically?
So it's really simple. We have our own SDK we call Argyle Link. Essentially, it's an iOS, Android, web component that you can put into any of your apps. That component looks similar to what Google SSO window look like, saying log in with X. Except in our Argyle Link, you can choose a number of companies that you might work for and you log in with those. So as an example, if you're a Starbucks barista who also drives an Uber and you're applying for a loan, you could come in to your loans, you know, good loans, let's say company that provides you loans, you know, read their terms and conditions, work with them, and they would pop up the pop-up for Argyle Link, where you just find Starbucks, log in with your Starbucks account, you find Uber, log in with your Uber account, then you agree to share your work information with that party. And as long as you provide that consent until you remove that, you know, that information is available for them to make that decision. What the client sees, you know, the company that provides the loans, they can either then use our console that provides them a nice sort of display of the data that's coming in, or they can automate that process using our API and make decisions on the go. So essentially, they get all the data that's coming from your accounts and in the nice formatted clean way, and they can then start using this. I mean, in reality, that same user could try and send you PDFs and screenshots from their work account, but that just would be inefficient. And we automate all of this process so you can connect with that user. And our work is to integrate with all the possible places you can work at in the United States, so this could work.
Where did this idea came from initially?
So our CEO, Shmuley Fishman, my co-founder, he came up with this idea because this is his third startup. And during his second startup, he was working with a lot of drivers who drive for different platforms. They were moving cars around. And they ran into this issue where people had to fill out the same information about themselves and their employment over and over again. So somebody would come in, they used to drive Uber and Lyft before, now they want to, you know, move cars around, and they already filled that information out. And, you know, he said, why there isn't a button that would allow me to just, you know, get that same information over, so they wouldn't have to fill this out. And that was the premise he had. And, you know, when we met, and, you know, he was hiring contractors online for exploring his ideas, we met, you know, hit it up pretty well and started, you know, exploring various ideas and ended up building one that stemmed from this need to sort of repopulate the information. Obviously, the vision got bigger and changed over the years, but essentially, you know, this was the idea.
And what is your business model?
So we charge our customers, which are companies like that insurance company I mentioned in the example. We charge them based on the plan they have, essentially per users that go through the platform. So, you know, if they connect 10,000 accounts that their users connect, we charge them for that. So that's the essentially the idea.
What about the market? Europe, US?
So essentially, we're currently focused on conquering the United States market. You know, we raised money with a big mission to integrate all the employment places people can work at in the United States. Everyone in the United States have logins at places they worked at. It's a legal requirement, you know, dictated by the federal government. So even if you just worked at Walmart for 3 months, you'll have a login showing your payslips, because they need to be accessible for, I think, at least 5 years. It's a little bit different in Europe, right? Because we don't necessarily have the logins to all the places we worked at. I'm sure we're going to conquer all the places either way, but we're starting with the US market.
Did I understand correctly that every US citizen will have an opportunity to log in the platform and provide their information there?
Yeah, if they ever go and apply for a loan, and that company uses us, right, because we're a B2B startup, then we want to make sure that they find their company in the list of companies to choose from, you know, and that's a lot of interesting work to integrate with all of them, and that's what we're doing.
How far you are from this goal?
So I think currently we, you know, it depends how you estimate it. We think there is an underestimated large amount of companies like small mom and pop shops. We want to get them all. I think we have the biggest pile of the pie already. I think we have like maybe 30% of the market, depending on how you count, currently. And you know, we have all the largest retailers, we have all the gig companies, we have all the largest HR systems you can integrate with. But, you know, there's so many of these companies and platforms and ways to connect that there's going to be quite a busy few years for us to keep doing that.
And for how long you have been already doing that?
So we've been, you know, working in Argyle for the last 2 years. So we raised our seed round a year ago, the start of the third year already.
And you're headquartered in US. And how did you ended up in US from Lithuania?
We're a fully remote company. You know, as every decent startup, we're headquartered in Delaware. But at the same time, we started building this company with the same belief and idea that it should be fully remote from the start. I think this reaps a lot of benefits other companies miss out on. One of them, the fact that, you know, Shmulik is in New York, I'm in Vilnius, Billy, our COO, is in San Francisco, our growth team is in San Francisco, we have developers in 15 different countries. We can find the world's best talent from all around the world and make competitive moves no other people can if they don't do that. So essentially this you know allows us to really scale pretty fast and build things at the pace that others can't build them.
You basically built a remote company already from the very beginning.
Yeah, before COVID and everything. We actually, you know, 2 years ago we looked at GitLab and WordPress and Zapier as examples of larger, fully remote companies. And there's others, there's Buffer, there's Toptal, there's others, right? But those were like the good templates to look at. And we started building it with our own sort of ideas and sets of processes. And when you start building an asynchronous, fully remote company, then I think, you know, you gain some efficiencies others can, you know, dream about. Like, everything's documented by default because we have to do that to be able to communicate, right? All the communication is on Slack. You have to run it really transparently so that everyone understands why each decisions were made up. And you don't get this problem of having one large office where everybody works together and then you have few remote people and you have trouble communicating with them. When everyone's remote, you sort of have to run the same process for everyone, and it becomes really efficient and scalable. There's loads of good, you know, sort of information written about this by GitLab. They sort of pioneer this field, and they're the first company fully remote that did an IPO, right? So, or are doing the IPO. So, yeah, it's a really an interesting topic in itself.
So basically, pandemic didn't change anything for you.
As far as day-to-day working, nothing's really changed for us. I mean, obviously, it impacted our lives in general and the world, and you know, it's a huge sort of calamity on the world. But apart from the day-to-day work, I still sit in the same place, look at the same computer, and we, you know, we just spend more time indoors. But otherwise, it didn't really change stuff for us.
There is a lot of discussions over the fact that remote work changes company culture. Well, basically, it is hard to, like, you know, motivate people and build a team. And a lot of people are stuck in this energy exchange, and we need that. We need to be present. And what do you think about that? How do you create this culture inside the company?
Oh, I think this is a really interesting topic. I mean, first, I have to say there are a few different types of remote work. Most companies that started doing remote work because of COVID ended up doing the very first level of it. It's they just spend all their day in Zoom calls. That's what they do. And that's not the most efficient way to do any work. First, people need to realize that you don't have to be in the same call all the time to do any work or make decisions. And that's why I say we work asynchronously, because that's sort of a next step. You have to learn how to work across different time zones and coordinate actions that way. So I think this allows people to be very motivated, because first they have to own, and they own their piece of work. You know, they're trusted to make decisions, you know, own their piece of work. So this already helps a lot of the culture problems. But if we talk about the culture in general, I think it's harder to build culture in remote companies. It's just different. And the way I look at this is, and this is a very geeky example, but it's sort of like CPU versus GPU programming. I mean, in one way, you know, in the traditional sense, when you have an office and you have one floor, then you sort of have one culture that grows and stays the same until you have to open the second floor. And most companies find this when they have to split offices or open a second floor, they run into issues of starting to create two, you know, sort of cultures. Again, this can be light to, you know, compared to monolithic architectures and microservice architectures, where if you have one monolith, it's easy to share things. However, when you have to split it up, you run into issues of how these two pieces communicate. However, when you build a company asynchronously from the start, you have to think about these processes from the start, because you're essentially building a microservice architecture of a company from the start. You end up having some sort of centralized culture generation place, usually sort of the leadership team, the executive team. You make processes so that everyone could contribute to the culture, that everyone could talk to other people or cross boundaries. And you build these processes that allow them to have, you know, virtual chats, that allow them to share ideas. For example, we write a lot of RFCs internally, requests for comments. When anyone has any idea about how to improve our service internally, we say, great, start an RFC. You know, they start from the technical RFC internally. People contribute with comments. They contribute with their ideas. And then, you know, if this gets accepted as a thing we have to do, we just put it in our backlog. So, like, to summarize this, I think when you run a fully async remote company, you essentially are running a microcosmos of small company cultures that currently have to be kept in sync with where you want this to go. It's a very different way to managing culture, but it's just new, and I think it's a lot of engineers are definitely more accustomed to this because they understand this difference in terms of architecture, and they can adapt to that pretty easily as well.
When you hire people and you say that the work will be fully remote, what is their reaction?
joy. I mean, we managed to hire people from Google, Uber, numerous large companies and corporations, you know, VIX, banks, whatever you name it, just because first, they want to work this way. People want to work this way. And we understand that. Like, we want to work this way ourselves. This is the most efficient way to work. And we don't do silly things like count people's, you know, hours. Like, we like some companies go really a wrong path when it comes to remote work, where they sort of want to monitor everyone's every button click, or, you know, they monitor people's webcams. That's I think, is a horrible way to go down. And that's a wrong way to do this. And the right way of doing this is what I think we're trying to do, which is, first, you have to trust people and you have to give them clear goals and responsibility. And you trust that they'll manage their work hours because they'll work asynchronously. It doesn't matter if they work evenings or mornings. If they're coordinated with their team, it's totally fine, right? So we're just trying to, first of all, trust humans, that they're humans and they'll be able to manage this, and have a pretty high bar when managing. We explain to people that because it's remote work and because you manage your own time, you're probably going to be working sort of longer hours, but have more varied breaks. You know, if you need to go and pick up your kids from school, that's not a problem for us or anyone. This shouldn't really be a problem for anyone, because what matters is your output and your contribution, right? Not if you spend these 15 minutes or those 15 minutes sitting in front of your computer. I think, you know, to answer your question, like, when we mention this, we get the best candidates, I think, because of this, because of COVID, a lot of people want to leave big cities. They don't want to risk their family lives. So we end up like getting candidates from other places that otherwise would be hard for us to compete with.
So how many people and in what countries you have in your team?
So currently, if I'm correct, because we're growing really fast, we're 55 people at the moment, I think, as of today. We have people, let me start. We have people in, I'm thinking about the map, so it's United States, Mexico, Brazil, Argentina. Then we have UK, Portugal, Spain, Austria, Sweden, Lithuania, Latvia, Thailand, New Zealand, and somewhere else I'm forgetting. But essentially, all over the globe. And think about, like, you know, being on call, having on call schedules. Like, it just comes natural when you have, like, your infrastructure team be able to be, you know, online all the time. Like, you reap a lot of unseen benefits that way.
Let's talk a bit about your previous experience. And what I found interesting that you, this summer, you left the position of president of Artificial Intelligence Association in Lithuania.
It was one of my passions for a while. This whole Lithuanian Association of Artificial Intelligence really started as just a group of meetups. I started organizing AI meetups maybe 4 years ago or 3 years ago. I don't even remember anymore. And they grew into this sort of massive movement. We ended up doing 15 or 18 meetups. Then 300 people would come to one. We had like world-class speakers, and I had a lot of help helping me build those. And I just, as somebody interested in AI and, you know, computer science in general, I started building this community, which then sort of grew in scope. And we ended up forming an association so we could like manage everything under one roof and, you know, join all these different initiatives we've been having in Lithuania. So, I essentially helped, you know, initiated founding this with 10 or so other people who work in the field. And I promised I'll run it for the first year or help to establish it. I always looked at potentially transitioning it, because after running these meetups for a couple of years, I was exhausted of my extracurricular activities, and with Argyle growing, I just couldn't really sustain this. So but what ended up happening, I'm still a member. I'm still sort of advising the current people who are running it. Davidas, who's the current president, was a person who organized workshops and other meetups in Lithuania. So we managed to like join all those initiatives together, which I'm really happy about. He's currently the president of the association, running it forward. And because of COVID, we don't really do meetups anymore, but we have different kinds of events and content, and we try to advise our government and whoever needs advice about AI, and we try to bust myths about what AI is. But currently I'm full-time focused on, you know, being a new dad and like running a startup, and that's enough of work for me. So
yeah, definitely. And if we come back to the association, what are the biggest achievements? Actually, this association thing, can it move things forward faster? Is it worth to consider this, especially in those new topics as artificial intelligence, for example? Does it help to society or to the industry to move things forward faster and to bring more understanding in the society overall on these topics?
I think when we started it, what we planned to do is sort of a lot of associations grow out of proportion and start serving their own interest in the sense that they exist for the sake of existing. What we tried to do is run a really efficient open source community and have that legal status as a basis for the community. And the community itself drive already a lot of change and a lot of events and a lot of positive things. And that was just the formality that's been added on top of these things to have a legal body for it. I don't really think the association itself doesn't really do anything. It's just the people underneath it. And I think we have a really strong AI community in Lithuania. We have sort of companies that are famous worldwide for like facial and fingerprint recognition, biometrics. We have a fully functional AI shop running in Vilnius where you can just walk in, register with your credit card and pick anything you like and walk out. Like, we have a lot of interesting innovation in that space. And I think that community has always been strong, and that just became an amalgamation of, you know, people working together. So
what else I found interesting, that you have quite interesting experience with NATO. You have also had something in common with this organization. Can you elaborate a bit about it?
You know, just to start from the beginning, I sort of started my career working as a digital consultant at Deloitte in London. And when I decided it was sort of time to move back to Lithuania and start my own startup, I started working with VR. It was 2013 or so. And that became a passion of mine, an interesting new technology. We ran a couple of different experiments and things, and that startup ended up pivoting multiple times, and we ended up using some of that technology to power some of the defense industry stuff. So essentially, I got involved in working with defense industry for about 4 years. We ended up building a lot of interesting training applications, not necessarily with VR, but the same technologies in that space. Some things I can talk about, some things I can't, but the essence is like we improved the security training of the Lithuanian and other forces, allowing them to better train to protect against external threats. We worked with numerous large defense contractors such as Saab, Indra, and BAE, like multiple contractors that's listed there. And as part of that, I became the expert in a few of the standard groups in NATO. Because my expertise was in VR and AR at that time, I became a leading chair of the standardization efforts for augmented reality use in land vehicles. It's a bit of a mouthful title, but our group was working on standardizing and preparing a primer for STANAG, which is NATO standard for how AR could be used within law enforcement in NATO. We had a group of world-class experts and scientists in that field. I joined that group and ended up leading it before I left. And the group still continues their work. And, that will be the basis for the new standard, how AR gets used within the military forces across NATO. It was definitely an interesting experience. And that sort of stemmed from all the other projects I worked on in the defense field.
So NATO is quite open organization to innovations, right?
It's a more of a complex question because the defense field used to be the sort of the bed for all the innovations, right? If you look at the history of Silicon Valley or the history of European innovation, a lot of it stems from the field of defense. I think in the last 20 years or so, that has changed. And sort of, especially in the field of computer science and IT, the defense industry definitely started lagging behind because of luckily a very prosperous and peaceful period in our times, and partly because, you know, defense budgets were reduced in the late 90s or the early 2000s. And I think now there's a new resurgence of first the understanding that because the industry was sort of put on hold for a little bit, and a lot of countries put their budgets on hold for a little bit, that there's now a need to come back and replenish those and restart some of the programs. And I think a lot of that innovation is sort of coming back. But you also have to understand that, like, the product life cycle in the industry is like 15 to 20 years. software product life cycles are usually much shorter. So a lot of technologies you use in that field have to be reliable, and they're not usually the newest or the flashiest. Because as we replace our iPhones every year, I don't think we can afford to replace our screens within our ships every year, right? So it's a little bit of a different mindset there. It's a reliability versus novelty, I think.
You have been working with this huge organization with a lot of big companies, and usually we are talking about what those companies and organizations can learn from startups. But is there another way around that startups can learn something from them, from big companies, from organizations?
I think every startup as it grows learns why certain companies are a certain way, right? You start to understand the need for processes. Let's say a simple example of OKRs, or just goals and targets that eventually all startups implemented one form or another. You know, they seem like very corporate things at first. And there are two corporate and two, they're just unnecessary at the start. But this is the same problem of scale. If you have one processor or one person, great, you're very efficient. But when you end up running a couple hundred people group, then you have to change the way they communicate and the way you abstract communication and the way you do things just to make things running. So I think a lot of startups learn that when they try to innovate in technology, they also try to innovate in management techniques, but that's a very different field of innovation. And sometimes they learn that, oh, right, this is why all the companies work that way. So I think there's no need to instantly reject everything about them, but there's a need to reflect and rethink what things are necessary and what things are not. And usually the biggest mistake everyone makes, I think, is just underestimating how quickly complexity grows. Complexity grows exponentially if you add it in two dimensions, right? But if you add if more dimensions to which you add complexity, that growth becomes faster and faster in every direction. And very often, simple management decisions don't help to reduce it in large companies, and they end up becoming very inefficient. So there's a fine balance in taking the best concepts out of those companies, but applying them efficiently. I think that's the answer.
Okay, and coming back to the Argyle, so what are your next milestones?
Currently, we're working very hard to add more and more platforms and places people can use us with. At the same time, we're innovating and improving our data viewer console experience. We're building this new product called Argyle Command that will show you and let you explore the API in more meaningful ways, even if you don't necessarily need to automate it. So we're going to be able to service more and more companies that are, you know, smaller in scale, don't necessarily want to automate things. And in general, I think this market has a lot of interesting opportunities that and products we can build that you'll see us build and use. And the basis for all of that is just being the first ones to get to the moon and have the largest number of connections so that nobody would ever need to use anyone else.
Okay, that's what I wish you, to be the first on the moon.
Working hard towards that, and hopefully that happens.
Thank you, Audrius, for a really nice conversation, and I really wish you luck with the project.
Thanks. Thanks for inviting me, and I'll start listening to your podcast.
That's great. That's it for now. I'll be back with a lot of interesting startup stories from Baltic countries already in a month. Till then, please check the website of the podcast balticmafia.eu and find out how you can spread the word about yourself to the world via podcast. Remember to wash your hands, wear a mask, and don't go into crowded places. Stay tuned and talk to you soon. My name is Ieva, and I'm the host of the Baltic Startup Mafia podcast.